The man had decided that he was going to a monastery, and he found one that had a code of silence. And at this particular monastery, you could say 2 words every 10 years. He went, checked in. First 10-year period went by. He was called to the head of the monastery, and the head said, "Do you have anything to say?" And the man said, "Food, bad." Well, the head of the monastery had never heard anything like that, but he dismissed the man. The man went back to the monastery and for the next 10 years lived there. Came back after 20 years, came before the head of the monastery, and head of the monastery said, "Do you have anything else to say?" The man said, "Bed hard." There again, head of the monastery never heard anything like that, but dismissed the man. He went back, lived in the monastery for another 10 years. 30 years had gone by. He came back for his 3-decade anniversary to say his 2 words for this next 10 years, and he said, "I quit." Well, the head of the monastery said, "I'm not surprised." Said, "You hadn't done anything but complain since you got here." Do you think that people complain sometimes? I mean, it's someone else, isn't it? It's your spouse who complains too much, or your boss who complains too much, or your kids just don't seem... I mean, of course it's someone else who does the complaining, but do you think our culture is a complaining culture? We were having a dinner there at the congregation, and you know my favorite part of dinner. My mother always says that life is uncertain. You should eat dessert first because you never know what's going to happen. And so I really have taken that to heart, and I was over at the dessert table. And this particular meal, the elders had provided the food, and all anybody had to bring was dessert and chips and drinks. And so there were more desserts than normal. And I was sitting there looking over the dessert table, and they had some of my very favorite desserts. Now, I've never limited myself to narrow down my favorite dessert. I have favorites. And so I have several different favorite desserts. One of them is no-bake oatmeal chocolate cookies. Now, I don't know if you've ever had one of those no-bake oatmeal chocolate cookies. I've never had one, just one. I eat them about 5 at a time. And there was a no-bake oatmeal chocolate cookie. And I was looking over this, and there was a cream cheesecake. And I'm going to say there were probably 30 desserts. I'm going to say 30. And there was a kid, looked like he was about, I'm going to say he's 9, maybe 8. And I'm sitting there looking over this dessert table, trying to decide which 7 of these I'm going to put on my plate because there are so many wonderful ones. And this kid is looking over it, and here's what he says. "They don't even have any banana pudding here." That's what he got out of his perusal of the dessert table. The one thing he had to say was, "They don't even have any banana pudding here." Do you think maybe he was missing the point? Yes. Yes, he was. And you know, in our culture, for some reason, we feel like it's our right to complain. We feel like because of who we are or where we are or some other deserving factor in our lives, if things just don't go the way we want them to go, then we somehow feel that we have the right to complain. You know, sometimes we laugh about complaining and we know, oh, so-and-so, he's always complaining, or so-and-so, she's always complaining, but when you look at the concept in the Bible about complaining, what you find is that God is very serious about complaining. There are a couple reasons why complaining in the Bible is simply not an option. Number one, it's not Christian. Number two, It's not helpful. Now, let me show you what I mean when I say not Christian. If you were to go to Philippians chapter 2, you look in verse 14, it's the most famous verse in all of the Bible about complaining, probably. And it says, do all things without grumbling and complaining. Now, that's a very simple statement. Do all things without grumbling and complaining. You know, when you start to ask why, do you do all things without grumbling and complaining? When I said it's unchristian, here's what I meant by that. Is there a scenario in which you could ever imagine Jesus Christ complaining? You know, a Christian is someone who follows the example of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine Jesus complaining about how hot it was outside? It's just so hot out here. I can't believe I got to walk around in these sandals and this weather. I'm gonna get my sunburn out here. It's almost like you can't even imagine it. You know why you can't imagine it? Because Jesus would never do it. He would never complain. If you're a Christian, a person who follows Christ, you eliminate things from your life that your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, simply would not do. And one of those things is complaining. Do all things without grumbling and complaining because Jesus did all things without grumbling and complaining. Now I want to stop right here and ask you if you think that's part of your personality. You know, a lot of times a person will say, well, that's just who I am. I mean, if I change that, then I'm changing a part of who I am. And yeah, everybody just kind of accepts me that way. And that's just kind of how I've defined myself. And yeah, I complain, but it's just who I am. You know, how far does that go? Yeah, I cuss, but that's just who I am. Well, no, you can't use that, can you? Well, yeah, I steal, but that's just who I am. Well, there again, you can't use that. See, because we think that complaining is not as bad as cussing, because we think that complaining is not as bad as stealing or something like that, then we feel like we can just say, yeah, I'm just kind of one of those people. But, you know, in the Bible, when you find that part of your personality is something that God doesn't like or permit, then what do you do? Well, it's real simple. You just change that part of your personality. Now, let me show you how serious God takes this. If you were to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, you would start reading about the Israelites coming out of the land of Egypt and then going into the promised land. And then you would read that verse 5 says, but with most of them, God was not well pleased. Most of the people that came out of Egypt, God wasn't well pleased with them. And then you ask yourself why. And you get down to about verses 9 and 10 in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And it says, don't murmur as some of them murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. He says, all right, we got an example here of the children of Israel who came into the promised land wilderness, but they didn't go up and go into the land because they disobeyed God. So for 40 years, they wandered around in the wilderness, and some of them complained about that. And when they did, God killed them. Now, let's stop right there. What if God killed us when we complained? Our numbers might be a little thinner this morning than they are this morning because, sometimes we do complain. Let me show you why God was so aggravated with the complaining that went on. Now, I want you to, if you've got your Bibles, I want you to look at this one with me. I want you to turn to Numbers chapter 11. And I want you to see what complaining was being done. Now, you remember they come out of the land of Egypt. They're in the wilderness and they don't have any food. At least they don't think they have enough food, let's say. And so God explains to them that he's going to feed them. And you might remember how God chooses to feed them. He sends something out of heaven that is a tiny little white seed called manna. The name manna is Hebrew for what or what is it? Because they wake up one morning and they go outside and the ground is covered with this little white seed and they've never seen anything like it. And they say, what is that? And so they name it what? What is that? And it's this stuff called manna. And they realize that you can eat the stuff. And not only can you eat it, but let's go right there in verse 5. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up and there is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. Now, if there was parenthetical statements in the original text, this is where one would be. Now, this manna was like coriander seed and its color was like the color of bdellium. All right, here is how I envision this going on. I think of, you got 4 or 5, 6 or 10 of the Israelites, and they're around a fire, and they're talking about the good old days. The good old days of when they were back in Egypt. Now, cornbread, you can cook it any number of ways, but the cornbread that I guess I like the most is the flapjack-like cornbread, where you kind of fry it like a pancake-like. Then you can put, well, you know why I like that, because the surface area is so much larger, and you can spread a whole lot more butter on it that way. That's probably why I like that type of cornbread cooked. Now, I'm thinking of these people, Israelites, wandering around in the wilderness, and they're by this fire, and they've cooked them some manna. And I think about them having some of it in their hand, kind of being floppy, like a cornbread flapjack type. And they're thinking about Egypt. And they say, you remember the flesh pots, the meat pots in Egypt, where we had fish? And then they go into a list of stuff they had, and onions and leeks. Now, a leek is just another kind of onion. I've been to a lot of fellowship meals, and sometimes people bring just raw onions. And there are some people who like to eat raw onions. I'll tell you what. I've never met an onion that I liked, really, especially not a raw one. You know, some of those grilled onions you put on one of those fair hot dogs I could go for. But, you know, eating just a straight onion, it's just not how I envision myself wanting to start any meal, just a straight raw onion. But some people love that. More power to them. I'm glad you like that. Now, let me tell you what manna was like. It explains that it was, in Exodus chapter 16, like pastry made with honey. Now let that sink in just a minute. The children of Israel are griping early on in their stint in the wilderness. They don't have enough food, so God sends them some stuff. Oh, you know what they don't have to do with manna? They don't plant it. I don't know if you've got a garden this year, but if you do have a garden, we've got motorized tillers that do a pretty good job of tilling up the ground, but it's still work if you've ever done much tilling. And you got to get that tiller out, and it feels like it's beating you up as you're tilling that ground if it's a garden plot that you've never tilled before. The Israelites didn't have motorized tillers. They literally pulled a plow behind a donkey or a mule or a horse or an ox of some sort. But they didn't have to do that with manna. They didn't have to till the ground. They didn't have to plow the ground. You know what? They didn't have to weed manna. You ever weeded a garden? You ever weeded a flower bed? You get down there and you're weeding, and they didn't have to weed it. You know what else they had to do generally to grain? You had to harvest it with one of those harvesting hooks, and then you had to tie it into sheaves, and then you had to beat it out and thresh it, where you threw it up in the air and the wind blew the chaff and dust off. And lots of times it'd be a real dusty, hot job. You didn't have to thresh manna. You know what you had to do with manna? Walk outside of your tent in the morning and pick it up. That's it. Ready to eat. It's an MRE. Meals ready to eat. You could eat it raw if you wanted. Or you could cook it. Or you could boil it like a little dumpling. Put something in it. You could boil it. You could fry it. And here's what it tasted like. Pastry made with honey. It was pre-sweetened. Literally, heavenly pre-sweetened. You don't have to put sugar in it. It was like a pastry made with honey. Now, the best I've got for a description of this is a God-delivered Krispy Kreme donut that's good for you. That's what we got going here. All you got to do is go out and pick it up, cook it, and it tastes like pastry made with honey. And the children of Israel are sitting around griping, wishing for an onion instead of God's pastry made with honey that they didn't have to do one thing to except pick it up off the ground. And you look at that and you just think, can you believe the gall of a group of people that would complain about God's care for them when they're eating heavenly pastry and wishing they could go back to Egypt and eat onions and melons and leeks and forgetting all about the slavery that they were begging God to pull them out of? Can you believe a group of people would do that? And here we are. In the United States of America, and we're looking back over those complaining, ungrateful Israelites. Oh, it's kind of like that boy and his family that went to church that one morning. They went to church and they got in the car afterward and the dad said, can you believe that sermon? That sermon went 15 minutes over, wasn't well illustrated. That preacher can't put two words together right. About the worst sermon I've ever heard. You'd think as much money as is given at that congregation, we could get a preacher that could preach. The mom said, yeah, no, can you believe that song leading? It was horrendous. The fast songs were too slow. The slow songs were too fast. We couldn't get any decent singing. That little boy was in the back seat, and he was just taking all that in. After they had complained for several minutes, he piped up, and he said, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but you got to admit, it was a pretty good show for $1. Pretty good show. You ever had a person complain about what goes on at church? About how the preacher just preaches too long or too short? How the song leader just doesn't get songs right or doesn't pick songs that anybody knows or picks too many songs that everybody knows and doesn't branch out? Or you ever complained about what's in your pantry? Here's what I mean. You ever opened your pantry or your refrigerator and made this statement, we don't have anything to eat in here? You got soup, you got crackers. This is just an aside, but the other day, I think it was my daughter, she asked for some Ritz. And I said, no, we're not going to have any Ritz before dinner. She said, okay, but I won't take any Ritz. What about just one Ritz? Just one Ritz. Well, Ritz isn't really the plural of Ritz, but anyway. You might have some canned chicken, you got soup, but there's nothing in here to eat. You ever gone to your closet? A closet filled with clothes that 90% of the world wishes they had 1/20th of? And you said, I don't have anything to wear. You ever gotten to a vehicle that, it's got 80,000 miles on it or so, and you're thinking it's got a dent in the hood and it's not near as stylish as your neighbor's, and you can't believe you got to drive this, and so-and-so gets to drive a new 2016 Silverado. You ever looked at your faithful spouse who you have been married to for 8, 9, 10, 60 years, and you just think, I can't believe she doesn't and you just got a list of stuff you can't believe she does, or you look at him and you think, I can't believe he doesn't. You've just got a long list of all the stuff that you're just not happy with about this person. You see, it's like we think it's all right to complain. You know, when you complain, number one, it's non-Christian. Jesus wouldn't do it. Number two, you're saying God's not doing his job right. You're just not letting me have what I want, God, and I don't think you're doing what you ought to be doing. Complaining questions God's care of you. You know, there's a man by the name of John Gordon. John Gordon started a company that was based on a simple rule. He wrote a book about it several years after the company was very successful. And the book is titled The No Complaining Rule. Here was what John Gordon had found. He had done all kinds of research, and he said, in the United States of America, companies are losing billions of dollars, and it's not because of bad management. It's not because the resources are not there. He said companies are losing billions of dollars because there's an atmosphere of complaining that goes on in most company offices. He said, I'm going to start a company, and we're going to have a real simple rule. It's going to be real simple. You do not complain at this company. Now, he wasn't saying you couldn't make a suggestion, wasn't saying you could not be unhappy with the way something went. If you had a problem, instead of talking about all the things that were wrong, you needed to present a solution to the problem. You don't just mindlessly and needlessly complain. He said, here's the rule. You complain at this office, you get one warning. You complain again, you get fired. It's pretty simple. Complain, you get a warning. Complain again, you get fired. Let me ask you a question. How do you think that company did? Think they were successful? Oh, they were successful, to the point at which John Gordon was able to write a book about his company's success and show the world that complaining, even from a secular non-Christian perspective, is nothing but detrimental. Complaining. It's interesting to me that when you go to Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, it says, do all things without grumbling and complaining. But the most of the time, we don't read the rest of it. That you may be blameless and harmless, children of God, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. What happens when you don't complain? You look different. The reason you look different is because everybody complains. There again, who wrote Philippians? That was Paul, wasn't it? Do you remember Paul's entrance into Philippi? There in Acts chapter 16, he was called to go to Macedonia. Philippi was the chief city of Macedonia. He went into Philippi and he began to preach, and the leaders in Philippi didn't like his preaching, and so they had him and Silas beaten and thrown into the stocks in the inner part of the prison. Now I want you to think about that. Paul gets called by the Holy Spirit into Philippi. He's doing exactly what God wants him to do. When he gets there and preaches because God wants him to be there, he gets beaten. And then he gets put in the stocks. You know what stocks are? I guess the best illustration I've got for stocks, have you seen the old Disney Robin Hood, where Robin Hood's the fox and Maid Marian's the fox, and Friar Tuck is there, and the sheriff of Nottingham puts Friar Tuck in the stocks. Those wooden, almost like handcuffs, but you got to stick your head in it as well. Well, the stocks were designed, and especially lots of times you also had to put your feet in them, that you were to put your feet in these wooden, basically shackles, and you were to put your head and your neck and then your hands in these wooden vices. And it was designed so that you would be sitting in the most uncomfortable position possible. I mean, you guys, I mean, We'll be in our air-conditioned 2014 truck, and we'll drive 3 hours down the road, and we'll get out and say, oh, I can't believe we got to drive in this truck 3 hours. My back's hurting. I'll tell you what, these three-hour drives are killer. And Paul and Silas are in stocks in the middle of a damp, dark prison with their backs bleeding and bloodied because of the stripes they've just taken for the gospel's sake. From our perspective, who has every right to complain here? But Paul wrote, do all things without murmuring and complaining. 12 o'clock midnight. What are Paul and Silas doing? Talking about how unjustly they're being treated. Talking about how miserable their conditions are. Talking about how they can't believe God would call them to Philippi to end them up in prison. No. No, they are singing praises to God at midnight. And then there's that earthquake and the Philippian jailer comes in. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the Philippian jailer had had people in there that complained before? In prison? Do you think that virtually every person that had ever come into the jailer's prison was hacked off that he was there, couldn't believe how unjustly he was being treated, couldn't believe how little food they got and how bad the conditions were? And how many people you think that the jailer had ever seen that sang praises to God in prison? You see, because lots of times we don't finish that verse. Do all things, fill in, even get beaten and thrown into prison. You know, there's a lot of stuff you're going through that I'm not. You might be going through chemotherapy. Do all things without grumbling and complaining. You might be in a situation where your spouse has turned his back or her back on God and on you and is demanding a divorce. Do all things without murmuring and complaining. You might be in a position where your boss is unfriendly and unkind. Do all things without grumbling and complaining. You might be in a situation where you have been laid off. You can't find work. Do all things without grumbling and complaining. You might be in a position where your child is sick. Do all things without grumbling and complaining. You see, all things? Well, Jesus did all things without grumbling and complaining. Paul did all things without grumbling and complaining. At least Paul tried to. He wasn't as successful as Jesus, but notice what it says. That you may be blameless and harmless, children of God, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. You're going to be different when you don't complain. It's kind of like the two brothers. One of them, didn't matter what you did to him, you couldn't get him down. He was always going to be upbeat. Didn't matter what was going on, something was going to be right. The other one, didn't matter what was going on, didn't matter what you did to him, something was always going to be wrong with it. And so the parents thought, well, maybe we just haven't been treating them right. Maybe if we treated them different, things would be better. And so they took the one that complained and grumbled all of the time, and they put him in a room full of everything he could possibly want. The latest video games, the best snacks and candies and cakes. Left him in there for, oh, 2 or 3 hours. They took the other one that was always upbeat and bright and cheery, and they put him in a room full of horse manure. That's it. Horse manure. Went back after a couple hours and they opened the door to that one that complained all the time. They were expecting things to be different. Put everything in there that he wanted. He comes out. He's miserable looking. They say, well, how was your time? He says, it's terrible. He said, terrible? He said, yeah. ran the train too fast and it broke. I ate too much of a cake, gave me a stomach ache. Couldn't get past level 2 of the new video game. He said, I want out of here. This is ridiculous. They thought, oh, no. If that's how he's thinking, what in the world is our other son going to be thinking in a room full of horse manure? And they go down and open the door and they look back to the back of the room and there's horse manure flying everywhere and their son is just laughing. And they think, what in the world is going on here? And they call him. He's covered in horse manure. They say, son, you've been in a room full of horse manure for 2 hours. He says, I know. They said, what are you laughing about? What could you find good in this room? He said, well, I'll tell you. He said, in a room that's this full of horse manure, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere, and I'm going to find him. Let me ask you a question. Now get serious with me just for a second here. Whatever it is you complained about last, your house not having enough room, your car being too old, your spouse not doing what you wanted him to do or her to do, what if right now, that changed? And whatever it was, let's say it was your car and you got your new car, brand new. Would you now no longer be a complainer? Because your problem that you were just complaining about, it just got fixed. You see what we're getting at? Complaining has nothing, listen to me, pay attention, nothing to do with your outside circumstances. Because people who complain, when they get what they want, it's not as if they say, all right, great. No, they just move their mind to the next thing that they have to complain about. Now, you and I both know we're not perfect. You and I both know sometimes we complain. But the truth of the matter is we need to take it real serious. And we need to ask ourselves, have I considered how important it is to God that I thank him for what he's given me and refuse to complain about what I don't like? You know, after I preached a sermon like this in Russellville, Alabama, there was a girl who came forward. And she said, I've always been a negative, complaining person. And I know that's wrong. And I want this congregation to pray for me because I want to change. You know, we're living in the freest country, with the most financial resources, with the highest life expectancy rate, and the most health resources of any country in the history of the world. And yet you can go to Africa in an outlying little village where the kids have worms and they do good to have one decent meal a day and they live in mud huts and they don't complain and they're happy about their lives. Now, why is that? Why? You know, this morning, you've got everything that any person could possibly want. You're sitting in an auditorium that was specifically designed for you to hear a message from God, and you have the opportunity to respond to that message. You're still very much alive. You have the resource and the ability to respond to God's message. Will you do that? If you're not a Christian, don't complain about what the people do that causes you to turn away. Yeah, well, they're hypocrites. Yeah, well, I haven't. Yeah, okay, don't complain. It's your chance now to become a Christian. If you are a Christian and you have been a negative, complaining person. Let's take to heart, do all things without grumbling and complaining, that you may be blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Now catch the very last part. Among whom you shine as lights in the world. You want to shine for God and be the example He wants you to be? Let's stop complaining. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, I ask that you will as we stand and as we sing.